is a Wednesday, middle of the week, November the 10th, 2021, 15 days from Thanksgiving 2021, and 45 days from Christmas. How about that? Doesn't that make you feel very happy? Glenn Coble in studio with me this morning. And by the way, Glenn, the really big news is out this morning. People magazine has named Paul Rudd 2021's sexiest man alive.
Man, I don't even
tear
know
out
who
the
he is.
Front page.
Who is it?
I have no idea. Paul Rudd.
Let's see if
there's a little information here. Paul Rudd has been crowned. I don't know. Don't know. Don't care.
I think I came in second.
Just put that in the don't know, don't care category. Yeah. Who votes on these things?
I don't know. Some
sexiest man alive.
Some panel of people on their editorial board.
Well, we do want to let people know right off the bat that your friend Dr. Feynman will not be on today. So what's going to happen at 12:15?
Well, and this may be a forewarning so you can turn it off. But I'm going
to... Well, low expectations.
I'm going to... my wife said to me, you've never told anybody about your service during the Vietnam War. And I said, that's because I sang in the United States Army Field Band. There isn't much to tell. And she said, you've told me lots of stories. Why don't you tell those stories? So I'm going to tell those stories.
And you'll be on
basic training stories and stuff like that.
And I should mention tomorrow during my show from 8 to 10 a.m., we've got a whole a slew of veterans coming in, and you're one of them, covering Korea, Vietnam, and World War II, I believe.
I hope you don't expect me to explain to you all about Vietnam, because, quite frankly, I was a long way from Vietnam.
Well, it's interesting because I'm not really sure where any of these people were stationed or what their position was in the war.
Yeah.
But tomorrow we shall find out.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I looked this up while I was doing some research for my shows today and tomorrow, only 7% of the American public are veterans. And the reason why I looked that up is because the other night you and I were at a really great...
Well, we can talk about that.
Yeah, we were at a dinner for the with the presidents, and it was fantastic. And Fred Malone did a fantastic job.
Terrific.
And his whole crew. But he asked everybody toward the end of the night, everybody who is a veteran, please stand up. And I thought, you know, there were a lot of... Most of the people there were over 40, and I figured there'd be a lot of people that stand up. There weren't very many people. I thought maybe 20 or 30 stood up, and then I decided to go look it up, and only 7% of American public are veterans. And then I thought, well, that's because there are a lot of people in active service. Only 1% of America is in active service, so that would make a total of 8% people that have seen, you know, that side of the. That side of the battlefield, I guess.
Well, and you just, it's interesting because that's why I think it's a very important day, although it does not get the attention that a Memorial Day or a 4th of July or Labor Day gets.
Yeah, but it is interesting, though. When I was in the financial business, I guess, we did take Veterans Day off, and Veterans Day always comes on the 11th. It doesn't come on the Monday of that week.
Now, you didn't take it when it was a Friday, did you?
What's that?
Veterans Day. Usually when it's on a Friday, the banks take Saturday as their
day. We took the day off.
Really? You shut down on a Friday?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because we were open Saturday morning, so... But it was kind of interesting... To think that I had been, at the time when I left the credit union, I was probably 70 years old or just about to turn 70. And maybe I was 70. So for 70 years, I had never had Veterans Day. Nobody had ever saluted me as a veteran. And I'm going to talk about that this afternoon, too.
Well, it's hard to know who's a veteran.
Yeah, I know. And I'm not one of those people that has a bumper sticker that says I'm a veteran of the Vietnam era. I'm not one that puts a sign in my window that I'm a veteran. Nothing like that. I find that so self-serving, it's embarrassing. So.
Well, but I think it is nice to know who's a veteran.
Yeah, and I don't mind people doing it. But it just doesn't feel right to me. That's all.
So tomorrow we have a lot of Veterans Day programming here, and a little bit of Veterans Day programming coming up today at 12:15.
Well, and I did a commercial yesterday. Terry Klein did a commercial, and you just showed me the commercial, and I don't think people are going to know that I'm a veteran, and I definitely don't think they'll know that all five of the people in that show are members of the area media. And I'm going to talk to Terry tomorrow and say, hey, don't you think you ought to say who these people are?
Well, were you the only veteran in that bunch?
I don't know. I think probably. I know the young lady from the Star was not, and Paul is not, I don't believe, and nor is
Scott or Scott. The other one.
Yeah. I don't think the young man that does, what's the name of that? He used to be our weatherman.
Yeah, was the weatherman here for a while.
I don't believe he is. So I guess I probably was the only veteran. And I thought that's why I was going there to do the show. I didn't think I was going there to represent WWGH, but I didn't mind.
But it turns, see,
I don't think you could tell that from what I saw as the ad.
Well, I don't know. You know, Terry went to school for that, so if he thinks that's the best way. I don't know. I mean, I wish I could have attended. I was invited to attend.
But you were on the
air. I was on the air during that time, which is confusing to me because I thought two of the other people were on the air at that time, too. But maybe not.
They're probably
voice tracked,
recorded people.
Yeah.
Well, and Terry asked me why didn't, you know, when I said you couldn't make it, he said, well, why didn't he just run a recorded show? I didn't get into it, but I think that's kind of opposed to our mission.
Well, I think
record everything.
Well, right, we have recorded shows that we air here, but I think when you're on the air, people obviously are listening in the morning, pay attention to last hour, how many calls we had.
Yeah,
I think when you put on a recorded show, that's why I hate to even take vacations or days off if I don't have somebody to come sit here. I always think the morning show should be live as it happens because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And if you want to take a vacation and have me as your,
you'll come host.
No.
No. Glenn will come host. It would be Glenn and Adam. They could rotate the... Well, they could do it on the same day for all I care. They could have the show. We need a good... I often think about this. What if I get sick one day?
Well, I've thought about that, too.
What if I get the flu? There is nobody to call. Now, I used to call Charlie.
You could call me.
I do. Well, Charlie and I didn't talk on the phone, but I could email him, and he would look at it quick.
Charlie wouldn't talk to you on the phone?
No, we just didn't talk on the phone. Okay. We just didn't call each other. We weren't phone buddies like that.
Oh, it's Scott.
Clank. You know what's funny? I don't know if I've talked about this on the air or not. I have an illness where I hate to call people.
My wife has that same illness.
I really do. Getting up in front of a group, no problem. Doing radio, no problem. Being in a room with people, where you're talking to them, no problem. But the two things I hate are trying to make small talk with somebody.
And my wife hates that,
yeah,
too.
Which I hate it. I absolutely hate it, which is why I avoid most parties. And I hate calling people. Yeah. I just hate picking up the phone and calling them. I don't know why there is such a block on it.
Well, my wife hates it so much is when I call somebody, she leaves the room. She won't listen to you know, because I put it on speakerphone. She won't listen to that. You know?
But I don't understand really why it is, because I'm not anxious and I'm not. I just don't like to do it. It's almost like eating a food you don't want to eat. It's the same sensation. You don't want to do it.
Do you mind doing the voice thing where you can look at them on the screen?
Yeah, that's not really a it's the act of calling the person.
Oh, okay.
If they call me, I'll answer the phone.
Yeah.
I just don't like calling sometimes if I'm around.
I've heard complaints about you not answering the phone.
hey, that's a whole other issue, but I just don't like calling people.
Yeah.
I don't know, really I don't know. It's a strange thing. It's a phobia, I guess.
I'm going to ask my wife tonight if she's figured it out, and tomorrow I'll tell you.
Yeah, tell us, because I really don't know, because getting on here and doing this show, I don't have a bit of anxiety or angst about doing that. Answering the phone here when somebody calls in, no problem.
Yeah.
I can answer the phone, but...
You're always in control, though, here. When you get a phone call, you're not at home, or you have to call somebody, you're not in control, really.
Well, really? Is that... Are
maybe,
you not? You pick the person you're calling, don't you?
Yeah, but once you start talking, how do you get them off the phone?
Yeah, but I don't mind answering.
Yeah.
If you would call me, I've answered the phone for you. When you called with, if it rings, I mean, I answer the phone, but to pick it up, and my friends do get mad at me sometimes. They say, why do I always have to call you, is what I get.
Well, and I text you a lot because
I've sensed
that you don't like to talk on the phone, and it actually is a lot quicker. I like texting because you don't get caught doing that small talk that is kind of a pain.
But no, I mean, really, if you called me even just to shoot the breeze, if I was not doing anything, wouldn't bother me a bit. But if I just wanted to call you to shoot the breeze, I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it.
No, because there's something about it that... It's a weird... Does anybody else have this problem that can explain it? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. I had a conversation with a friend one time. They said, you're a bury... I guess this is a term now, that you're a bury-the-body type of friend, which I guess means I can call you anytime for anything.
Oh, my
Not
goodness.
That I would help you bury the body. But they said... Well, do you feel the same way about me? And I said, no, because I will not call anybody. I mean, I really have not had any medical issues in my life, but I often think if I was in the hospital, I wouldn't call anybody.
You know, when I was in the hospital, I didn't call anybody.
Yeah,
I wasn't interested in talking to anybody.
It's a weird sickness. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, is that the reason why you didn't call Mary Ellen Withrow that time?
It's people like you who call in and try to rake me over the coals about it. It's why I don't do it.
Well, I got another thing I want to talk about, too, not just to kid you.
Are you talking about the time that people say I stranded Mary Ellen? Listen, that was Michelle's fault, and I can't get beyond that. So go ahead.
Okay. What do you think about when kids graduate that they be required to do a year in the service?
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting...
I think that might help the violence and the drug problem, too.
Well, here's the thing.
That's a good point.
My only problem with that is some people are just not as athletically gifted as others, and if there's an active war going on, I guess there would be a chance that you could be deployed and possibly killed. And I think there, and I'm not saying these are right, but I know that there are some religious beliefs. I know there are some personal beliefs that I will not kill somebody. I will not fight somebody no matter what the reasoning. So if we're talking about boot camp, that's one thing. I don't mind that.
Well, there's kids, too, that wouldn't be able to go through boot camp, but... You know, you could always have a section for...
Yeah, like getting up at a certain time, answering to somebody, making your bed, eating what's on the menu for a year. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Doing clerical jobs or something.
Absolutely.
Like,
I think you got it. I think it's a good idea.
They do it in Israel, I believe.
People responsibility.
Yeah, I would be for that. I think that's an interesting idea. As long as you could keep them out of active combat if they don't want to do that.
Yeah. You know, that's the reason why I called, not just to kid you about that.
No. Well, that's fine. I love answering the phone, and I love to be kidded. But it is a weird thing. I will not call somebody. It takes a lot to do that. But it's not a fear. See, people think it's like an anxiety-ridden fear. It's not that. It's like eating... I'm trying to think of a food gravy. It's like eating gravy. I just don't like it, so I'm not going to do it.
It's not as bad as your fear of getting married.
Well, I don't even know if that's a fear. I think that's kind of like gravy. I just think...
Anxiety, yeah.
Yeah, well, I've decided that one day I'll have to get married, though, because I want to make sure somebody's on my plug not to pull it out when it comes to that point. So maybe when I'm 70, I'll hit you.
Hey, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, it's never far away. Yeah. Well, yeah, but I think it's a good idea. I have
too.
To agree with you.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, caller.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, well, and they do. I think it's 2 years in Israel you are required to do government service. Now, you don't have to go into the military. You can do government service in, lots of other things. As a matter of fact, like I said earlier, only 7% of the American public are veterans, which means... A lot of people did something other than that. One of my guests, who is a world-renowned distance runner, Gary Tuttle, declared, conscientious objector, and was required to serve the government for a year. And I think he trained kids to run or something like that. But he did have, they gave him a job that was non-military. So, yeah.
It's an interesting idea, and I think it's a positive idea, because I think it teaches some fundamentals.
Sure, and it gives you a little bit of discipline.
Yeah, and I'm all for that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to psychoanalyze why this is a thing with me now.
You're going
to
worry about that all day.
Well, I wonder, because it's not that I want to do it or that I'm going to start doing it, because I probably won't, but I don't know why that's a thing, because being in front of people, no problem.
No, you like doing that.
I like doing it. I'll do that.
I can see that.
Yeah, so it's strange. Although, I don't like people who say they don't have any nervousness. And to me, nervousness is different than anxiety.
Yeah.
You know what? Nervousness is you want to do best for that group. Yeah. You're not nervous for yourself. You're not nervous of the people. Some people are.
Yeah.
I guess there is that anxiety of public speaking. But I think you should have some, you know, I don't want to half do this.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to show up and you know, phone it in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So that I have. I want to give whatever, I want to give the best that I have, but that's it. I don't have a nervousness of it.
I love to public speak. Maybe that's why nobody calls me to
do it. Nobody ever calls you to do it.
But I like public speaking because I like that jolt that you get. But I am terrified, not terrified, but I am very anxious an hour before I have to do it. But I prepare pretty well so that don't have that. Now, I have done a case, I've been asked to speak, and I had no time to prepare. Then I get a little nervous, but I'm not afraid of the people. I'm just a little nervous that I don't want to screw up.
Yeah, well, I think you should be anxious, because I think it all goes away the moment you get your first word out. But I think that people should be anxious. If you're not, then why are you there?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because you're just talking.
I always found, and I read this in a book that I read about public speaking, and that was my major in college, so I guess I should know what I'm supposed to do. But it said, always start a speech with something that gets their attention. I remember one of the things I used to do when I did a lot of public speaking when I was in the athletics, and I would go to my step up to the podium, pull a golf club out, which had relationship to athletics, and snap it in half, because I had a whole bunch of them that I bought for that very purpose. That always got people's attention.
You know, the thing that I don't like is people who try to be funny. And you feel it.
I know where, yeah.
Yeah, you feel it. You know that they have planned that to be funny.
Yeah.
And it's just not.
You can't plan funny.
No, and that's the unless you are a stand-up comedian who is very successful,
mm-hmm.
Don't try to be funny. If you end up being funny, good.
You can give humorous anecdotes, but don't try to be funny. Try to be a comedian.
This is where, and I'm not putting down anybody who spoke at the dinner with the presidents, because I think they all did a fantastic job. Jan Augenstein stole the show, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was so impressed with her Florence Harding portrayal and how she worked the crowd. She worked the Teddy Roosevelt performer in the room.
Yeah, she did.
And she got a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
And I don't think she was trying to get a laugh.
No.
I think she was in full Florence Harding regalia. And she wasn't supposed to speak. I don't think until a few days before did she know that she was going to be speaking.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, because her husband,
Warren
was
Harding, was
to
supposed
speaker.
To speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't able to be there because of illness. But
he was super.
I was so impressed. Yeah. I wanted to walk up to her and just say congratulations, but I couldn't because the show was still going on.
Well, I did for you. I was
good.
Sitting next to her.
I hope
said,
you did.
That was a terrific speech.
It was.
Yeah.
She sounded like a first lady. She had the cadence of one. She talked to the people like they were real people.
She did great character.
Oh, she didn't get up there and try to tell the story of Florence Harding.
Yeah.
She did what I would guess Florence Harding would have done if she was called upon to speak.
Yeah, I just don't, you know, I was thinking to myself while she was doing that, would Florence Harding been that outgoing? I don't know whether she.
Oh, I think she was a very. She was older than Florence or Warren. She was older than Warren. Her father was very outspoken, Mr. Kling. She was a driver behind Warren Harding. There's no doubt about it. I think the if you want whether you like him or dislike him, the three drivers of their husbands as first ladies were Hillary Clinton, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Florence Harding. There's no doubt in my mind.
They
were not demure in any way.
No.
They were partners with their husbands.
Yeah.
Which, and oddly enough, probably those three had the most extracurricular, the husbands had the most extracurricular activities, which probably is because it worked more like
You mean they used to play football at
Yeah, they used
lunch.
To go and play touch football on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Jan Augenstein did great. And the guy, and I know he's local, because I sat with his wife, who did John Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
John Kennedy.
Did he catch that, the accent perfectly?
The accent,
oh,
which I talked to his wife about before he went on, because when she said, I'm here with JFK, he's my husband, and he's cheating on me with a Jackie over there, which was fun. But she talked about how he worked on that, because
I'm
he had portrayed other presidents, and he got it.
Oh,
he got it. And he did something that none of the others did that night, which I liked. He did a John Kennedy speech, basically pretty much word for word, I think, which was the going to space speech.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it when you hear that speech again in a John Kennedy-esque voice,
It takes you back.
Yeah, it takes you back, but it also reminds you that at times, we do stuff in this country not because we need to. We didn't need to go to space.
No, probably
we
not.
Did it because it was a goal.
Yeah, it was climbing Mount Everest.
Yeah, and it was a great speech.
Yeah, it was. Now, I didn't realize that was a word for word. I could tell.
Was it? I don't know.
I don't know.
I really don't know.
It was very close because I listened to that speech. You aren't old enough to have listened to it, but
I've heard it though.
Okay, yeah,
it's on tape.
But he did such a good job, and he made it sound like it was impromptu.
He didn't
make it sound like he was reading.
And I watched him, and he did not glance down very often.
About every paragraph, yeah.
Yeah, which is hard. You're not going to memorize a paragraph.
Yeah.
That's the problem. When you're doing your own speech, you can do that without a script. But when you're trying to do somebody else's speech, you don't want to screw it up.
Right.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, this president's mic you guys are talking about right now, did you happen to tape that? Because that would be really interesting to listen to.
You know what's interesting? I thought about that as I was heading over there, about taping just the speeches. Because a lot of it, really the 3 hours of the, or 2.5 hours of the night is pretty much just mingling and eating. Those four speeches, I did not, I have to say, that was, because I imagine Fred would have let me do it, put a recorder up there on the podium.
Maybe they did, I don't know.
Maybe they did.
Yeah.
If Fred's out there listening, maybe he'll let us know.
Yeah,
that would be interesting. And also, how do you compare the woman that did Florence to Craig Schumer?
Yeah, that's interesting. Jan was great. Jan was really good.
She was.
But what Craig Schumer brings to it is, Craig Schumer probably looks more like Florence Harding. And when I know it's hard to say that a man does, but he's a very diminutive man.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat, because he came in costume to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when we interviewed him. And I sat 3 feet from the guy, so I never saw what he looked like out of costume. And he was in full regalia of Florence Harding. You believe you're talking to Florence Harding at some point, because he looked so much like her, and he never breaks character, and he knows Florence Harding. He knows her. He knows how she would answer. He doesn't take a creative license. So I think they're strong in their own ways. I even talked to Fred Malone. I said, I know, and Jan is great, but it would be good to get Schumer here one time, because he's probably got the anger that Florence had.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I mean, when I was listening, you guys replay that interview and I listened to it, but even when you're interviewing Craig, I still think I'm listening to Florence.
I know, isn't that, it's weird. And I'll tell you, it's a funny thing, because there was an engineer, and I think I've said this before, at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who had no idea what we were doing. And when Shermer came in, it's an older woman. And the guy came up to me and said, because he was talking about the miking. He was trying to get our miking right. And he came up to me and he said, "Now, how close is she going to be to the mic?" You know, he didn't know it was a man.
Yeah.
That's how good it was.
Yeah. And I'm still waiting on that interview that you're planning on doing one of these days with Craig, and that guy you had on is Warren Harding.
Oh, yeah. Scott Rankin, yeah. Who does a great Warren Harding. Yeah. Great Warren Harding.
That would be one of your top interviews.
Yeah, I would like to get Shermer lives up in Canton, I believe.
Yeah.
But I think he would come down. I don't know what the barrier to that would be, because to be honest with you, I'm not even sure how old Shermer is.
Yeah.
I know he's not young. But, yeah, I'll work on that. But, yeah, that's a good question. I would say they're both very good. But Shermer probably, if you look at a picture of Shermer and a picture of Florence.
I looked it up.
Yeah.
And it's uncanny.
It's uncanny. It really is. It really is. Hey, thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. It's peculiar how close he looks to Florence Harding.
On the break, I'm going to pull it up and see what... I have not seen him before.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a little video of the interview we did, in case you want to see it in action. If you go to YouTube and search probably Florence Harding Scott Spears,
okay,
you'll get a good... And you'll hear.
All right.
It's... And then look up a picture of Florence Harding, and you'll see Shermer and Harding. I hope that the historical site, because I know there'll be some money involved, and I don't know what they pay those people, but I hope they get Shermer. And no diss to Mrs. Augenstein, but he's just something else when it comes to that character. Just something. And even if you don't bring him in for that, just bring him in for something, because he would be as entertaining as you would wanna be. And he's done it before, so he gets it.
Yeah. That would be interesting to see somebody that's that close.
Yeah, I don't know if it was taped, though, but great event. And the food part of it's very fun.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not food that I would ever eat, but it's food that the presidents
It was,
ate.
I took a spoon, a little, well, it wasn't so little, but I took a spoonful.
Listen, Glenn, I saw your plate.
Yeah, it was
I saw
full.
Your plate. I even walked over when you got dessert. I thought, well, if he wasn't diabetic before, after this.
And I took each dessert, too, a spoonful. Now, the fruitcake, you couldn't take a spoonful. It was a big slice.
Yeah, can you believe that? What irony in life. I'm sitting at the table, and it wasn't called fruitcake. It was
election cake.
Yeah, election cake. This is George Washington's favorite dessert, allegedly.
It was nasty.
Well, then somebody at the table looks it up. I said, well, what in the world's election cake? And come to find out, it's fruitcake.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's why George Washington had wooden teeth. We figured it all out now.
Well, he must not have had any taste buds either, but...
Poor George.
It wasn't really nasty. It was very nice. I'm not a big fruitcake fan. Charlie would have loved it.
It was, I'm sure, of that. You got to remember, that was a famous dessert in the 1700s.
Yeah.
So that's probably what they ate back then.
I think it tasted even more fruity than the fruitcakes that we get now.
Yeah, those Claxtons are awful. But the John Kennedy mousse was interesting, because I'm not a big fan of chocolate or really mousse, but it was okay.
It was a little spicier than I expected.
The mint juleps were good.
I didn't get a mint julep. I got the other red.
The cherry?
I
went with the mint julep because I thought it was lemonade, and then I drank it and I realized it's not lemonade, but it's good. It's got a little... It wasn't alcoholic, but it had a little kick to it.
Yeah. Oh, so did that red stuff, whatever it was called.
And let's see, what else was good about that night? The food was the cornbread that actually had corn in it. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that was good. Now, I thought, oh, this is going pretty long, because it did seem like it was going long. But we got out at 8:30,
it was timed right.
Timed, yeah. Yeah. I think Fred was a little concerned about George Washington.
You know what's funny?
There.
I didn't hear what he said when he walked by.
When he walked by, he said, we have three more
speakers. Angie heard it, and she told me after, but when it was going on, I just heard him say something to him.
He was very tactful.
I didn't know. I don't know who played George that night, so I don't want to say anything about that part of it.
Well, he knew all the stuff.
He knew George. Yeah. He did.
I enjoyed listening to all that stuff. But it was getting a little long at that point, and I think Fred was a little concerned that we'd get out at 9 instead of 8:30.
Well, and Martin Van Buren was interesting.
Yeah.
I found him
I liked his clothes. Stature.
I liked his clothes. I thought his clothes were very period.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was all the... And Mary Ellen did a good job.
Oh, she did.
Talking about
job.
The first female treasurer. That was fun.
She is a treasure to the city. Everybody ought
Boy,
to
Glenn, you
her.
Are... I get in trouble for leaving her over at Stewart's Root Beer, and here you are.
I love her.
Well, there you go. I didn't even get a chance to talk to her that night. I felt bad about it.
I didn't either. I just said hi, and that was it.
I didn't even get that far. Huh. Because I was seated clear on the other side.
Sure.
Yeah, and... I didn't get a chance to talk to George Kasotis either.
I think I just said hi to him too as well.
It's structured, and it's kind of hard to get up from your table and make your way across the room.
And my knee was killing me that night.
Well, I didn't want to leave the people at my table.
Sure.
I'd be rude, but I did talk to Fred, had a nice conversation with him, talked to you a couple times, you were close to where I was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a great night.
Hey,
and
both of us need to thank Fred for
this. Oh, absolutely.
Fred, that was just a phenomenal night, and I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
I went home
and told my wife everything.
Yeah, I'd been to it in the past, and it's just a fun event.
It is, yeah.
And the other time I've went, I believe I sat at Harding's table. Well, I gave you my ticket.
Oh, is that right?
Well, I think so.
I was sitting next to Mrs. Harding. Yeah.
Well, I think what had happened was there was one free spot at Harding's table.
Because he was not there. Yes.
Right, and I needed an extra spot.
Yes, you did.
So I think that's what happened.
I got you.
So, yeah. Well, I gave you the better seats, so that's what
well,
happened.
Yeah, I was 4 feet.
You were 4 feet from the table.
Yeah.
But in any event, last time I went, I sat at Harding's table. So I sat with Jan and Warren, which was fun.
You know, I talked with Jana, and I was told by Fred that they wouldn't break out of character. And she did not break out of character except for one point. She leaned over to me, and she wanted to say something, and she said, I'm going to break out of character at this point. And she told, and I'm going to keep it to myself what she told me. But
well, what was it in regard to?
I think it was in regard to... where the girls' room was, or that she
okay. Well, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Florence wouldn't have asked that?
I bet she would have.
I bet she would have, too. There'd have been no problem there.
She'd probably have been looking for the closets, too.
Well, you know, somebody made a remark like that that night, and did Florence know anything about the closets?
I don't know.
I don't think she did.
I doubt it, but...
Because she was already... She'd already went to her reward by the time that book was written by Nan Britton in 1927.
And who knows what a wife really knows about her husband?
I don't know what she knew.
I think about my life with my wife, and occasionally I get embarrassed thinking, I wonder if she knew I did that.
Well, I suspect that Florence probably knew about Carrie Phillips because that was so long and happened in Marion and was just... Carrie Phillips was a friend of hers. What kind of friend is that?
Yeah,
but there you go.
Friends.
But the Nan Britton, she was so young, and she wasn't in their class. And
wasn't it just a Washington, D.C. thing?
I don't think it started until Washington. So I'm not sure she did have any idea that was going on.
Yeah. Well, I bet she knew that his eye wandered. Even my wife knows my eye wanders. I don't do anything about it, but my eye does wander.
Well, I've asked a lot of people, do they think that Florence knew about the child?
Oh, yeah.
And most people say no, that she probably didn't know.
Yeah, that would have been tough.
And everybody says that Warren knew. Well, even Nan Britton said that Warren knew, and that his sisters knew. But I don't think Florence did know.
Well, he certainly wouldn't blab it to her, I wouldn't think.
No, I don't think he would, and I don't think his family would, and I don't know under what circumstance she would know.
Maybe if he had lived longer, you know.
Oh, yeah, as the child would have gotten older.
Out, yeah.
And Nan
I didn't. That was a bad choice of words.
Well, and Nan would have spoken about it.
Yes.
Yeah. But really, there was only about a 2 or 3 year period in there.
Yeah.
So I think you can probably keep something hidden that long.
Yeah, yeah. Great night. Great night.
Good night.
Thanks, Fred.
Yep, thanks, Fred, and all the hard work that the people at the Historical Society do.
We even got introduced, you and I.
We did How get about introduced. You know, that was very nice.
It was nice.
And they clapped.
Stunned me.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that was going to happen. But it was very nice, and you know, everybody at the table had either listened to the station or was aware of it. So I was also happy about that.
Same with our
table. So that's always very positive.
As a matter of fact, Chris, who was the son of the one of the gentlemen that did a little speaking, they were from Mansfield, and he had heard our station. So
yeah, well, we're coastal.
Yeah, well, and he probably had driven into the city because his father and mother were in town here. So,
and I do want to let people know that Jim Ganahl, my interview with Jim Ganahl, which I did a couple weeks ago, is going to air tomorrow at between 5 and 7. You'll want to listen to that. And then it's going to repeat on Friday between 2 and 4. So there you go.
How did he strike you as a human being?
Jim Ganahl?
Yeah.
Shy.
I was going to ask if he was shy, because I've seen him talk to other people, and he acts a little bit reticent.
Well, he told me at the end that he had, I'm trying to think of the word he used, but essentially avoided doing interviews. Mm-hmm. He doesn't mind talking about the weather.
Yeah.
He'll do that. But talking about himself, he did not like. And I looked. I could not find any interview he gave where he's ever talked about the stuff that we talked about it all.
I don't think I've ever seen him on an interview.
No, and being that he's been in Columbus on television longer than anybody, 42 years, 42. Never to sit down and do an in-depth interview, because we talked about the prescription drug incident in the early 80s. We talked about the lawsuit that was filed against him by a coworker at Channel 4. We talked about why he left Channel 4 in 2016, after being there from 79 to 2016, we talked about the other important things we talked about were his health. We talked about his health, which is precarious. We talked about how he looked on television, because that's always been a thing that people talked about, how he's gained all this weight and doesn't look well. We talked about that. We talked about how he came to Channel 6, why he came to Channel 6. That's a fascinating story. It's all there.
Yeah. Now, it sounds like a great interview. Yeah. I didn't see it. But
5 to 7 tomorrow here on this station, and 2 to 4 on Friday.
Okay.
You don't want to miss that. If you have even heard the name Jim Ganahl, you'll be fascinated by that interview, because all those things are discussed in depth, plus a whole lot of weather information, kind of, he's been published in Reader's Digest for just knowing folklore. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating.
That was kind of what I was trying to do when I was in college. My major was speech and drama, but my minor was climatology. And I wanted to be a weatherman, kind of. I really wanted to be a star, but that didn't work out. I really wanted to be a weatherman, and it's not as easy as you think. There are people that are weathermen on TV that have no degree in climatology or anything like that.
Yeah.
But, as a matter of fact, the guy that's the most famous one.
Willard Scott.
No, African-American.
Al Roker.
Al Roker. He doesn't have any education in it, but he has learned the business. And it's not a hard business to learn. You just have to follow patterns.
Well, and I think present it in a certain way.
Yeah.
Because how long do you really have?
Yeah, and you have to be somebody that people not only trust, but they have to like you. Otherwise, they're not going to stay with you.
Well, I don't think Willard had a background in...
didn't he?
No, I don't think so at all.
Yeah. Well, they didn't... Back in the early days, they really didn't have... The course I took was a very early climatology course. It wasn't something everybody was going into.
Well, most people in the early days ripped and read the weather. Ripped it off
everything.
The machine and
the
read
news,
it.
The news, I did it that way.
Well, the news I kind of expect, because you can't always write your own copy.
That's
but
true.
The weather, you're almost reading it word for word what the forecast, because what are you going to change?
Yeah, you better not.
Yeah, you better not change the forecast. That's going to be problematic to explain to people.
Unless you change it to every day for the next 5 years, it's going to be sunny and warm.
You know, our weatherman, Adam, here, as I said earlier on this morning, I think he's fascinated with the possibility that there might be snow.
Oh.
This weekend. Because great. Every news report... Our every weather report, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, he brings up snow.
Well, you know, that's good for me. I'll tell you why later, but go ahead.
But the closer we get to it, the more he talks about it. I think it's starting the weather report today. Something about snow is going to make its debut this weekend or something. He's really on to that.
Yesterday, I went down to look at an RV that my wife liked, which... is incentive enough for me. So I went down and looked at it. I had worked on all the plans, how much I should pay, how much it should cost. I had it all logged out. It's in my phone right now. And I got down there, and we just couldn't get to a... we were about $1,000 different. And I'm not going to go to the extra $1,000. But anyway, maybe that snow... will make them think, we better get rid of this thing. Maybe Coble's the right guy, so it might help.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to... I can't see it being more than a dusting.
Oh, yeah, no. Not at this time.
And people... I think this is what the weather people have a problem with. It's something different to talk about, even though it's going to be nothing. But people don't understand it's going to be nothing. Right. So they run to the store and buy bread and milk.
Yeah. Well, the ground is probably 50 degrees minimum right now. So even if we do get more than a dusting, it's going to melt when it hits the ground.
Well, that's the thing. We've had, 3 days here and are going to have 4 tomorrow that are 60s. Up in the 60s.
Yeah.
So if it does come Friday night, the ground is not going to be cool enough to support any type of snow.
It'll melt it away, yeah.
If it even happens.
Yeah. Well, let's hope for Adam. If he really likes it, let's hope for him that he gets something to talk about.
The weather reports on this station are brought to you by Rip Reed. That's where they come from. That's who's writing those.
Wasn't he a comedian that used to throw
food in the air? Yes. He was very popular that way. I still can't figure out my phone phobia.
No.
I'm going to call it that from now on. Phone phobia.
I'm going to ask my wife if she's figured hers out.
You know, I don't know if you ever end up figuring out your own phobias.
Oh, no. I don't know why I'm afraid to handle fish. I mean, they're not going to hurt me.
Well, or snakes.
I know why, because they could hurt you.
But didn't you touch a snake?
Yeah, I touched a little brown snake. He was about 6 or 7 inches long, and James brought him in, knowing full well that I was not really in favor of touching snakes, but I touched him, and I liked it. He was a nice little snake. Brownie, I called him.
Oh, very nice.
we named
the snake.
Yeah, we bonded.
Is the snake still alive?
He was going to take him out into the woods to let him go.
So he just got him for the purpose of the show.
To scare me, yeah.
Well, that's nice. That's a nice little show we had going on.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I think we did it for this hour. What are we going to talk about next hour?
Good question.
Don't forget, Jim Ganahl, today. No, not today.
Not today.
You know, if I got to this quicker, we'd be okay. Tomorrow, 5 to 7, and Friday, 2 to 4, on this station. My interview with Jim Ganahl, exclusive, in-depth. You may never hear it again, because resisted, that's the term Jim Ganahl used. He's resisted doing an interview like that throughout his career.
Probably has the same phobia about doing interviews that you have about calling on the phone.
Probably does. Yeah. We'll be back in about 10 minutes.
P 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place, from broadcasting legends Charlie Evers and Mary Ann Michaels.
Alexander Hamilton is going off the $10 bill in 5 years. So long, Alexander. And he is going to put a woman on air.